An estimated 400,000 children in the United States are in the foster care system. According to the National Council of Juvenile and Family Court Judges, children of color are disproportionately represented in the system in more than half of the states. New Jersey is one of those states, and on any given month, there are approximately 7,000 kids in foster care. 3 in 5 are black or Hispanic. An investigation by New Jersey Public Radio's Sarah Gonzalez explores this disparity. Sarah, welcome to The Takeaway.
Thank you.
Let's talk first about what disproportionate means. Are they studying blacks, Hispanics, and white kids adjusted for all of the possible causes that might lead to being into foster care and looking at the disparity that way?
So we looked at every child who entered foster care in New Jersey over the course of 5 years and the race or ethnicity of each of those children and the reasons why their parents lost custody. And we found that black children are more than 4 times as likely as white children to be removed from their parents. The state does not actually break down whether it's black children in poverty or black children in single parent households or anything like that. But we spoke to a policy advocate in Washington, D.C. His name is Aronde Miller. He works for the Alliance for Racial Equity and Child Welfare. And he said that there are things that New Jersey could be doing to kind of test whatever assumptions they might have about who is entering the child welfare system.
So exploring this disproportionate representation is not done by the state. But when you did it, you found clearly that there is an overrepresentation on the part of black children.
Yeah. The black child population in New Jersey is 14%, and yet black children make up more than 40% of those in foster care in the state.
We're going to hear from Aronde Miller, who gives us a big picture of what's going on in the system in just a moment. But first, let's hear the fears of a mother that you took a look at here. This is Latifa.
Like, literally go hurry up and knock on doors and ask, okay, let me, you know, hold your meat real quick, or let me borrow your canned goods real quick, just so I can have something in the refrigerator for when they come.
So she's talking about the fear of inspection.
Right. So she lost custody of all three of her children, and she lost custody for testing positive for marijuana and for Percocet, a painkiller in the delivery room. And she's been working for almost a year to regain custody of her kids. She gets these home inspections, and she and other mothers I spoke would say the first thing that caseworkers in New Jersey do, black mothers, the first thing they do during these home inspections is open the refrigerator, open the pantry to look for food. Now, technically, these mothers should be allowed to talk to their caseworkers and say, I need help providing for my children, and the state should help put them on food stamps or give them services that they might need. But there's so much fear. They don't want to give the state any other reason to think that they're not fit to parent their children.
And did it surprise you as a reporter that, I mean, did she have a prescription for Percocet?
She says that she had a prescription for Percocet during her pregnancy at one point during her pregnancy. But then that prescription ended and she was getting a generic brand. In the case of this mother, once she lost custody of her son, she kind of spiraled and people who represent parents and advocates for parents and advocates for children say that this is something that tends to happen when parents lose custody of their kids. In the case of Latifa, the state started considering adoption, and that kind of made her snap out of it. And that made her say, like, okay, I need to clean up. I need to do something because I cannot have my kids go into adoption. So that's one thing that I'll clarify. We looked at kids who were temporarily removed from their parents. So not parents who lost their parental rights, which is a much more serious situation.
But still, a traumatic situation. And you hear it in the voice there of Latifa. Let's listen to Jamela, who's another mother who is representative of when you begin to look at the economic statistics here between various families and various racial groups, you begin to see how the disparity works.
Like, you'll see a Caucasian person in the supermarket and their children don't have on a hat or shoes and it's cold outside. You know, let that happen to an African-American. Before you know it, they're reading your license plate and boom, you have social worker knocking on your door.
So in this case, the state, when we presented the state with our findings, the state said, well, you can't just look at the race or ethnicity of the children who are entering the system. You have to look at there are risk factors involved, single-parent households, family structures, substance abuse, socioeconomic conditions. And they said, you know, that tends to be a better indicator of who ends up in foster care than race or ethnicity alone. But Aronde Miller with the Alliance for Racial Equity and Child Welfare in Washington, he said that the state of Texas, they decided to analyze their data, their practices, to test whether or not poverty was actually leading to who was ending up in foster care. And they found that poverty didn't account for the racial disparity in their system. They found that caseworkers and judges were instead treating poor Black parents differently than poor white parents. And policy advocates say that this is because of people's judgments of
subjective judgments of how certain factors play in racial groups versus other racial groups. Here's Aronde Miller.
Somehow we think that the impact of the substances on a white mother's ability to care for and nurture her child are so much different than the impact of substances on an African-American mother.
Now, when he says we, who's he talking about there?
He's talking about society in general, but in specifically caseworkers and judges and the people who play a role in who's entering the foster care system. I will say that it's not just the caseworkers. People can get introduced to the child welfare system with one phone call. It can come from a neighbor, a school, a hospital. Anyone can call a state hotline in New Jersey and allege that a child might be in danger. So they could say, I have a neighbor. I think they're smoking marijuana in the home and there's a two-year-old there. And with that, caseworkers are obligated to go out and investigate each allegation that comes into a state hotline and determine whether or not to remove the child at that point.
As a reporter, did you find credible this idea that at a supermarket, if your kid's not wearing a hat, if you're African-American, that someone's going to report on you and you're going to get a knock at the door?
You know, it's funny. I was talking to a coworker, and they were saying how one of their friends was on the train in New York City and that their child refuses to wear shoes, and that some lady on the train said, I work for Child Protective Services, and you need to put shoes on your child right now. And this is before I was fully launched into this investigation, and we were thinking, you know, I wonder what the role of race was in that situation. And then when I heard all of these Black mothers in particular talking about how they feel like they can't do certain things that white parents can do, you know, that's certainly what they feel.
Sarah Gonzalez, reporter for WNYC and New Jersey Public Radio on the disproportionate representation of Blacks in the foster care system in New Jersey, representing a problem that's nationwide. Thanks so much, Sarah.
Of course.